Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food and beverage radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network since 2009. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you sun in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
I'm Souther Teague.
And I'm Greg Benson.
Boys.
Souther, what's got you bitter these days, man?
Man, oh man, glad you asked, and great segue, by the way. Listen, yesterday, Shaker and Spoon, our good friends from the show, the people we've done our cocktail box with, Speakeasy Cocktail Box, have launched a Better with Bitters experience via Kickstarter, and I'm part of it, as you might imagine. We crushed our initial goal of $10,000 in less than 20 minutes, guys. And currently we're at $73,000+ in less than 24 hours. It's pretty crazy. But we want to keep the energy going and get people to back it. We've already done a stretch goal. We're about to do a second stretch goal. We're going to send out the whole experience involves sending out a box that has 12 different bitters in it. We're going to make three different cocktails multiple times each. So that when you walk away from this box, you have a very clear and present understanding of how to use bitters and when to use bitters. And there's also lots of, I don't know how Kickstarter works. I've never even backed one, but lots of rewards and add-ons, and they involve me and maybe having a party with me out at the Shaker and Spoon facility. There's only a few of those, right? So you got to go get them quick. So highly encourage if you're interested in bitters, which if you listen to this show, you probably are, that you check out the Kickstarter for Shaker and Spoon. It's called The Better with Bitters Experience. And we're so thankful for all the people who backed us so quickly and so fast. It's pretty fucking amazing.
Yeah, that's awesome. And congratulations to you. And also, listener, you heard it here first. Souther doesn't know what all the reward tiers are. There could be something super weird in there that he doesn't know he's agreed to. So now's the time.
Well, there probably is. You know, if you guys know Anna and Mike from Shaker and Spoon, there's probably stuff in there that I have foolishly agreed to.
Yep.
I didn't think about
you could win his red glasses.
Who knows?
Fernet bicycle. No one, it's a mystery box. Nobody knows. I hope the folks at Shaker and Spoon do, but Souther doesn't, and that's the point.
Yeah.
Congratulations, man. That's awesome.
Hey, man. Thanks. Couldn't do it without the community that loves us so much. And, man, what good timing, right? This was in the works in planning before we did our box with Shaker and Spoon, which was in the works in planning before we knew we won the Tails Spirited Award. These things, like, I feel like we're on a roll, team.
Yeah, everything's coming up speakeasy, man. It's great. we're killing it with our segues today. Go us. Joining us today in the studio, we have from Apotech in Chinatown and LA, and now very recently in Nomad, we have Nicholas O'Connor. Nick, thanks so much for joining us, man. How are you?
Hello, guys. Good, good. Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here.
It's awesome to have you here. I was also realizing as I was saying the name of your bar, I've never actually heard it pronounced.
You said it really well.
I was thinking the same thing. I've seen it written down, but as I was going into it, I was like, I have no idea if I'm going to fuck this up or not. So how did I do?
You went with confidence, which made it good. It's so funny when we've been open 15 years now, and like the first year or so, we never wrote the name down. And we liked that it was sort of this like conversation piece. Like, what are we saying? Like, is it Apotech, Apotheke, Apotheke? So it's based off the German word.
I always thought it was apothecary, like apothecary, but like in the weird.
Yeah, well, okay, it's based off the Germanic word for apothecary, which is like apotheke, apotheke. But we always thought of it as like an apothecary and a boutique mixed together. So it would be an apotheke, right? So apothecary boutique, if we want to throw that in there. And we just sort of like the old world nature of, you know, the Germanic expression for it, thinking about, you know, back to old apothecary style of, medicine houses to come feel better.
Yeah, totally. It was the first bar that I saw. I if I remember correctly, it was the first bar that I saw in New York City with an absinthe fountain.
but also it was just like awe-inspired, like this, that little curve, that street that it's on. It's like a set in a movie. It's like it actually is. It reminds me of that, like the flat and like Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels. It's like that one, like weird little curve, like kind of downtown street. It's like the coolest location.
that's called the Bloody Angle.
Yeah.
And it's right off the original Five Points in New York City, off of Chapman Square. And it's this one, for people who don't know, it's this one block, right? And it's L-shaped. And as legend has it, I'll probably butcher this a little bit, but in the late 1800s, the largest gang battle in New York City history was on that street. And I guess the way it has it is two different rival gangs were just walking down the street. And since it's an L-shape, they didn't see each other until it was too late. And we're just on top of each other. And then there's this, in Chinatown, all the buildings are connected through underground passages. Mm-hmm. So the reason they know about this huge fight was as like people came onto the scene after the fact, they just counted all the bloody spots because all the bodies have been pulled off of the street and down into these catacombs. And, you know, underneath Opotec for us, we go four stories down, and things have changed with some new businesses opening. Some great stuff next door. But when we first opened, we're building, like 16, 17 years ago, I could get about half a block up, like underground, like into other people's spaces. It was, it's changed a little over the last 15 years, but so has a lot of Manhattan.
Ain't that the truth?
So the Bloody Angle. I remember when I first got the job or was being courted for the job, I had worked for, a couple different companies and I had really been all over the city. And, a man named Albert Trummer, who brought me on the project, who's sort of a legend in his own right. He was like, "You'll never know where this place is." And I'm like, "Try me." He's like, "It's in Manhattan." I was like, "Try me, dude. I worked as a delivery guy for years. Like, I know every street, right?" And he's like, "Doyer Street." And I'm like, "Doyers? Like the LA Dodgers? Like Doyers? Like what?" And he's like, "No, it's right off the Bowery." And I was like, "Oh man, it's just this one little block. It's so cool." So it does. It looks like Big Trouble in Little China backlot. Like it's almost unreal.
It really has that movie set vibe as you approach. And then when you get in the space, there's a similar vibe and feel. Talk a little bit about what the interior of the original space does looks like.
Yeah. So when we first got the space, it had been the Golden Flower Restaurant. Which had specialized in mango dishes. It had been there for like 20 years or so. So it was like stucco ceiling and, very bright, sort of traditional, what you think of like a Chinese restaurant of, the 70s and the 80s. And we got in there and our whole goal is we loved the outside, the street, everything was going on. We wanted that. We wanted a huge transition inside, right? You almost walking down the street, you're like, "Where am I? Am I going to get jumped? Like, what's going on here?" And then you walk through these two doors. We talk about speakeasy. This is, right when that was starting to get really popular too, a little bit before like, PDT came and Death & Co. and all that. So we really wanted that transition of coming like, "Where am I?" And like getting thrown into a different world, like a new world, like a new sensation. And I hate to say it, it's the best moment of the bar is when you first walk in. Because it's just so like, I'd like to think the drinks are good too, but when you first walk in, it's this moment of just, wow, I've just discovered something special. And it really creates its own atmosphere and vibe. And then we get to sort of treat you on top with hospitality and the fun creations that we come up with. But just sort of creating almost like a magic sort of late night Disneyland. But that isn't too over the top,
Well, do you feel like you maybe had to rein yourself in a little? Because my memories of the early days of the bar were it was quite over the top. Do you feel like you've kind of toned down as time has gone on?
That or everyone else caught up. So we don't set the whole bar on fire anymore. We have calmed it down
a
little bit.
That's what I was referring to. I didn't want to jump right into that. But yeah, the bar used to be kind of always on fire.
I don't have legal on the line with me, so I don't know how deep I can get into all that. But yeah, we do less fire, a little more technique, right? But we still try to carry that air of showmanship and fun and creating unique experiences, we really believe in curating the entire experience, right? So from how we create our own candles, we curate the music, we want the smell, the taste, the look, everything to just create a full moment, and really like transport people and it's give them an escape from their everyday.
So I'm very curious about this because, one of the things that I love about your original location in Chinatown is the fact that it is that very transformative boutique, a space where it feels like right down to like the weird little pigtail thing that you have on the bathroom sink. Like everything feels like there's not a detail that hasn't been thought of. And now that you have a couple other locations, I want to know what is your strategy for adapting to a new place? Because I just went to your rooftop spot in Nomad a little while ago and it was gorgeous. And it was
very similar, right? But its own space completely.
Exactly. Yeah. How do you adapt the DNA of a place like that to a second or a third location?
Well, so the first one, our main designer, who sadly passed away about a year and a half ago, who designed all three locations, Christopher Tierney, who was our primary owner as well. So shout outs to Chris. He had an amazing vision and was an unbelievable architect and designer. And a lot of that first one was his ideas incorporated with our ideas on how to make it functionally work. And really created this amazing space. And you're right about the attention to detail. It was trying to create this Chinatown little hole into something like amazing. And so there was a lot of specifics to do. You mentioned that bathroom. That's actually an old still, part of an old still that we have for the sink.
Oh, that's right.
But also that bathroom, if you notice, is only like is like 5 feet by 5 feet. It's so small. We have also no back of house there. So it was really, it's just trying to get the most out of your space, and everything's incredibly unique. And we did really, really well with Chinatown location, and it was great. And we didn't actually open our second one till another 8 years later. So we really sat with that location and really understood what it was and what it means. And then when we moved to our second space, which is in Los Angeles, we wanted to, of course, take what worked and what we really loved about the original location, but we wanted to make it special and different. You know, so we wear the same uniform, same lab coats. We have the same marble bar top that's underlit. And some similar aesthetic things, but that's about it. Everything else is unique to the space. You know, our Los Angeles space has a huge outside area, right? Even bigger than the one on the roof at Nomad, which is our largest space of any of our locations. So we really leaned into landscaping. We have tons of plants out there, and we have the bar. Our marble bar actually continues all the way outside, and we have a full 20-foot long marbled onyx bar top out there. So it's all hints to the original. But you have to really like breathe into the space and make sure and get out of it what you can and how much it works. And you know, with like Nomad, with the new one, we're a basement and a roof with our own private elevator, 12 stories, not 13 stories, 12 stories. And that's brought out all kinds of its own problems, you know, and things to work on to make it unique. You know, we have really low ceilings downstairs, but we built these amazing bays that I think really open up the room with infinity mirrors in it to really open up. So you just got to work with each space and see how it goes. We also want to get lots of people in there and serve lots of drinks. So there's all kinds of issues.
I was just going to say that I always say that like one of your most important business partners is the actual space itself, you know, what it actually allows you to do as a business. And you have to work with your space just like you would a business partner.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Amore Margo, I couldn't agree more with this.
241 square feet.
And the constraint right in there. He's like, a 5x5 bathroom. I'm like, that's huge, man. But let's talk a little bit, you were starting to lead into like, the size of the spaces compared to what you have in the original location. So how are you like scaling up and producing, you know, the sort of quality of cocktails that you do without sacrificing any of that for the larger scale? Like, how does one start in such a small venue and broaden themselves out and still maintain the standards?
Yeah, well, it's definitely been something we've worked on a ton. Moving into Los Angeles, it was about double the capacity. So we actually just mirrored the bar twice. So it's literally double the size. We have an indoor space and an outdoor space. So we actually just mirror what we've always done in Chinatown. We do that in and out. The same. We run what's called a expediter service, but we do like a front of house expediter, which I haven't seen at too many bars. They work just like how it works.
It's pretty rare, but I want to hear about it. Yeah, it's fascinating. Let's go.
Yeah, well, so to allow, you know, when we were first working on a lot of the drinks, we wanted to keep the touches down for the bartenders. You know, how many ingredients, how many bottles they have to grab, but we didn't want to limit the freshness in what we were doing. We found that so much of the time was spent dealing with the customer, the ordering, explaining what we do, taking money, taking payments, so much face time with the customer, which we really, I think in good hospitality, something that's incredibly important and needs to be addressed. But then also when you have a menu of 16 drinks, we used to be 30. We've cut that way down. For about the last 10 years, we've been down to 14 to 16 drinks. When we start, we had 30 for the first 4 years, which is just ridiculous. But so we wanted to maintain the bartenders that can make all these elaborate big drinks with all these different ingredients, but then also vocalize them and explain to people what we're doing, while also having large numbers and move it through. So we did, much like in a kitchen, we used an expediter, but at the front of house. So we have two different tiers behind the bar. Our bartenders wear lab coats and they're our mixologists. And we split the menu into sections. So we'll split, like Chinatown, for example, we split it into three sections. So there'll be three different bartenders on shift. And then we'll have two expediters who make the initial contact, take orders, and then redistribute where they come from. So if someone orders four drinks, two of them might be from station one, and then one from station two and one from station three. So then the expediter will drop a ticket, if you will. We have a different system. We use dice, but they'll drop like a ticket to each bartender who can continue to talk to the person in front of them, do their thing, but then also they know what drinks are coming up. They might be four, five, six, seven deep. And then while that's all going on, the expediter can then go to new customers, take new orders, keep the process going. They can close out the people whose drinks are being made currently. You know, so while they're working on your drinks right now, can I open a tab, close you out? So then it's cutting that time down. And also it allows for, hey guys, your drink's third up in the middle station. There might be a little something fun to that drink. Check that out. Watch what they're doing. So it keeps people more engaged. You know, it's so I always think the classic thing, when a customer says they've been waiting for 3 minutes, it's actually only been like 45 seconds. When they say they've been waiting for 10 minutes, it's been like 3 minutes maybe. So as long as it really helps with keeping people engaged. There's always something to look at. You always have a bartender there or a mixologist doing something, moving their hands, using showing off the mise en place, rather than staring at someone at a register or just fiddling with a handheld. So it just allows, it sort of spreads the work and allows to have more creativity and more time per cocktail for each bartender. And then it allows for volume to go faster because we're using an expediter.
Very cool.
I think it's brilliant.
Talk to me a little bit more about the dice. Where is this if you lose, you have to like jump on the line? Like, how does it work? Where does that come into it?
Well, no, it was a way to, so we love a good ambiance, as we talked about. So we like dim lighting. Mm-hmm. So, and a lot of times, you know, when we have our busier nights, Fridays, Saturday nights, you know, when we're at capacity, a bartender could have, you know, up to 7, 8, 9, 10 drinks behind on their tickets, right? So we use the different dice. We have multiple expediters placing in these orders. So each expediter has their own color of dice, right? See, and then each station has it's like 6 to 10 drinks. So they'll actually place the dice with the specific number. So then they know which glass, which glass it needs, and who it's going to, which expediter. So like, say Johnny has the green dice today. They know that drink's going. So if the drink's sitting there and Johnny's taking someone else's order and that drink's up, they can vocalize, hey, Johnny, your drink's here. It's ready. It's just to help communicate. It's a color coding system as well as a numbering system. So we just use little dice.
That's unbelievable. You've made expediting fun. I didn't think that was possible.
Well, also tickets, we used to use tickets a lot too, but you know, a bar can get kind of messy and kind of wet, and it's a great way. We have the expediters mark the glassware as well. A lot of our more intense garnishes will be done by the expediter upon presentation of the drink. So there's just little different ways. You know, sometimes it'll be, we have one called like the deal closer, and it's just a cucumber garnish on top. We can churn that one out a little bit quicker. So then they'll just throw the dice, drop the glassware, and you know, oh, I just have to make 6 of those and then get them out. Whereas, you know, some we involve smoke, fire, that kind of thing. Not too much fire, but some fire. And so in that respect, they'll leave the dice and the specific, and you'll know, oh, that'll have, you know, the expediter will hit the garnish first or have it ready or prepped going into the drink. And that's all part of their placement. So that, and it also helps, we want the mixologist in place. We want all three stations pretty much always occupied. That's sort of, want to keep that visual and keep that.
Right, for a visual cue for your guests. I mean, this sounds so cool. And, you know, I'm sure you've cultivated this over the years that you've been open, 15 years down in that location. That's pretty incredible. And then to be able to extrapolate it and use it at the two new locations too, that's great.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City, Long Island, and Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
You know, how I'm just looking at the notes that you sent over here, and I want to talk about the things you want to talk about. So talk to me about what you feel has changed in, you know, the palate of the, you know, cocktail bar visitor since you've been open and since 2008.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. So I've been in a really lucky position being with Apotec for this long. You know, I've had other jobs. I've done a lot of the things. And a lot of times, especially when it comes to creation and the cocktail program itself, it's almost like homework a lot. You have to fit, like, I'm doing a sports bar, or I'm doing, this is a quick spot. And what's been unbelievable about Apotec is it's kind of been, and this is a testament to the ownership and all the people we've worked there, it's kind of a blank canvas for us. And we could do kind of whatever we want and present our cocktails. And I know, you know, 15 years ago when we first started, you know, we only carry a single beer. We only have one red house red, one house white. And we only carry of any type of spirit, we only carry up to four expressions. So we're not a bar where you come for big choices. You don't come for a big single malt. You come for what we create and what we can put in the glass. And we try to curate all of that and only use brands we like that have a story we really like. And I think that's been really fun. But, you know, and I've watched over these 15 years, I've watched people come in and be like, no, I want my vodka Red Bull. And it's like, I'm sorry, we don't carry Red Bull. So now people are so much more open to trying things and want new things and new taste. And, you know, it goes along with food, too, with the organic movement. People paying so much more attention to what they take into their body and what they have. Sort of plays, coincides with what we've been trying to do this whole time of, you know, presenting new, fun, exotic, cool stuff, but then also done with a, you know, we don't make healthy cocktails. We make healthier cocktails. So always fresh ingredients. We make everything in house except the liquor.
Yeah, you can't have everything for everyone. You have to have something for everyone, but not everything for everyone, right? And it's better to have the thing that you do best and put that forward for them.
Yeah. And do it in the right way too, because hospitality is so important. You know, it's so easy to cross that line to become so pretentious. Like, no, we make this. Like, you need a chair. You need a seat. Like, you know, we want to have fun. We have DJs. We have a great time. We just also want people to sort of enjoy what we do, right? So we often limit what's available. Like, we don't really carry mint anywhere. Like, I don't mind mint. I love mint. Like, mint's the king of the herbs, right? It's the toothpaste. It's a gum. Like, it's the only one. But, like, flavorly, it's associated with mojito. And it's not that mojito is a fantastic drink. It's unbelievable. Like, if only I can come up with a mojito one day that's, like, across the world. But you can get a mojito at any bar. And we kind of have a line out front. So maybe we just don't have mint. So, like, love your order, love the mojito. But, hey, how about you let us make something with kaffir, lime leaf, and rum and come up with something fun? And that, you know, people are so used to what they want in a bar. Like, they go to their bar, they get their order. So I've watched that become easier over the years. People now are so much more like, yeah, there was always people open to it, right? And still fun. But now I think people are just so much more explorative with their palates, and they take so much more in. And if you go to, like, I was at, like, what was that? Outback Steakhouse has, like, a mixology menu now. It's like, it's gone both ways. You know what I mean? Like, they're trying a little more. I didn't have any of the cocktails, so I'm not sure Outback, but I'm sure it's great. But it's interesting how it's just becoming a little more mainstream to have more excitement, you know, and whether that's just because people like taking more pictures, the Instagram age, whatever, or it's just, dude, people are paying more attention with their palate. I like where it's moving, because it's definitely moving in a more interesting way and less cookie cutter, and allows us to work a little more out of the box, like savory notes in cocktails. In the last 5 years, there's almost nothing I can't put in a glass anymore. Whereas before, maybe four people would order it a week, you know, where we've watched those numbers start to even out, where it's not just the vodka drink, right? You know, it's everything.
I gotta tell you, I wrote an article for Eater, like, in 2009 or something like that. And I you brought up Outback. I reviewed the TGI Fridays Union Square Manhattan cocktail menu, because they were saying they were buying all these fresh ingredients from the Union Square Farmers Market. But, you know, they were using, like, cotton candy in their cocktails and it, like, stupid shit like that. But, you know, now, like, I actually went to a TGI Fridays, funnily enough, about 2 months ago, and I was just looking, I was out of curiosity, I was looking at their cocktail menu, and it's like, you know, they've got like a freaking Negroni on there now. And so like, it's exactly what you're talking about. It's like, it's really, I think that, you know, we've done these episodes where we and we talked about like gatekeepers, the people, the first people that you see, like usually it's like the door person or the host or maybe the expediter, right? But it's when guests come into these certain types of places, they're starting, as you said, like they're starting to treat every place like a cocktail bar, or they're being more open minded to it. So, you know, places like Epitech that have been doing it for since 2008, you know, like you said earlier in this episode, it's like people just started catching up, and that's great. That's great for us. And that's great for the industry. That's great for the fact that, like, you know, it used to be just a real crazy thing to get a Manhattan with rye whiskey in it. You know, right. Like, I feel like we're talking about some things that are just, that we took for granted for being in the industry. And just kind of like the floating $20 bill, you know, like where we'd all go visit each other and tip each other the same $20 bill and not pay for drinks. But now it's like literally like anywhere you go, it's like, like I say this all the time, Trader Joe's has a bottled Negroni cocktail that says Trader Joe's on it. That's where we're at these days. So yeah, I think that the general consumers they're out there for it. They go there for it, not just to go have their vodka Red Bull, as you said before.
And they also appreciate it too.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think also just real quickly. Yeah, I think real quickly that people, less and less people have a drink. You know, my dad and his generation and my grandfather, they had their drink. It doesn't matter if it's 10 degrees or 110 degrees. It doesn't matter if it's their birthday or New Year's Eve. That's the drink they're drinking. Right. I think people now are more interested in drinking the thing that is happening at the place they're at.
Yeah. But you know, I just want to say this, Souther, like, you know, like that's thanks to places.
Yeah.
That have established that kind of that ROS, right? And like places like Epitech, places like Amore Margo, you know, Grand Army came later. But the thing is, it's just, I remember when we had to, you know, just it was exhausting trying to explain. I think the cool thing about this episode and our guest today talking about Epitech and the one in LA and the one in Nomad is that I think the real takeaway from this to me personally is that we fucking made it. as far as our industry goes, like we did the thing. It finally happened. The thing that we always bitched about, like at 4 to 6 in the morning, you know, smoking cigarettes in the bar after it closed, you know, just so upset about the fact that no one gets me. You know, like we finally got to the point where it's like you can have 1, 2, 3 Epitechs in the United States. That's incredible. And I think that's like you should feel really proud about that, Nick. And like, so like, I know that you just kind of opened it. Like, are you planning on expanding like out of the country? I mean, like a lot of, I know a lot of the like kind of contemporary bars about like employees only, you know, they went global. And, you know, like there's even the Nomad, you know, there's one in London now that are some of our good friends work at, you know, and like, we are really appreciative of what you've done, but there's lofty goals and it always has been that way with Epitech. Is there a plan for the future to maybe go abroad?
I would love to go abroad, and I hope all of our partners are listening. let's get abroad now. That's not necessarily currently on the plan right now. We do have some really fun up-and-coming stuff. Again, I don't have legal on with me, so I'm not exactly sure. I know we have a big announcement next month, and I don't think I can spill it. So very excited about that. And then we've also been doing some consulting. So sort of taking on other people's programs. I run the program for the Goldner Hirsch. It's in Park City, Utah. And then I have an upcoming. Yeah, great. Very cool spot. I'm going to start skiing now. So that's really amazing. And that's actually a program. So it's the Goldner Hirsch, but it's curated by Epitech. So it's fully Epitech branded and using our program, our systems, not quite an expediter yet, but using our systems and our techniques and really elevating it. And then we have one coming out in a program in Denver coming out by the end of this year. So we're definitely expanding within the continental U.S., you know, putting our footprint out more. And honestly, looking for new projects, really want to expand. I had mentioned, you know, sadly, our primary owner had passed away about a year and a half ago. He was our architect, our full architect designer. That was sort of in about 8 months before we opened Nomad. So the full sort of focus of everything really jumped to Nomad for us, because all of a sudden, a couple of us who've never designed a bar had to design a bar, and just dealing with all that stuff. So I think the focus is definitely to have more locations and to expand and sort of ride the wave we're in. Because like you said about making it, right? Like, it's hard to think of bars that make it over, like, you know, through a generation, right? Because you have cool places that are cool, and they have their run for 5 or 6 years. You know, I can think about, you know, I moved to New York when I was 20 years old. I'm from Los Angeles. And I can think of when I first got here, the first, you know, bars that I went to, I don't, like, none of them are still around unless they're like full institutions, right?
Right.
Like this. So to the fact that we've made it, you know, it's funny, when I go to the original location, I feel like way too old. I'm like, how are these kids here? Like, how are we still cool? You know, like, wow. Like, I feel really way too old here, and we're still like happening. It's still a line on a Friday night after 15 years. So it's just, it's unbelievable we've made this far. And I'm just so grateful, because I've been a part of a bunch of projects that didn't make it. And also adds a little validation to, you know, what we did, you know, what we've been doing. You talk about they get us, right? Like, you know, a lot of times you're like, man, I'm doing this infusion for an extra, you know, 3 days. I'm cooking at low heat, simmering it. Like, is all this extra work worth it? Did they even, like, get the extra bergamot? Like, is it even working? Right. Like, does this make any sense? And I think it really has. And it's kept us around. And that just, it gives you a lot of confidence and to keep exploring, keep trying new stuff.
That's awesome, well, man. And I want to ask at the end of the show here, because this is always my favorite part of the show, is asking our guests to predict the future, because it's wildly unfair and I'm an asshole like that. But, like, now that we have made it, where do we go from here? Now that we've got people to appreciate, like, I can taste the 3-day infusion of the bergamot on this. Like, what do we do next? What is new and exciting and interesting in this world?
Oh, next we sell out, dude. It's a corporate sponsorship, man. I already have the streets. It's a back alley in Chinatown. Let's go. I want to be in a mall in Duluth or something. Let's go.
Visit the shit out of your bar if it was in a mall in Duluth. I'm just saying.
Right? But how about make the best mall bar in Duluth of all time? Like, I think what's cool is we talked about going more mainstream, people expanding it more. I want to get more drinks out to more people. I want to keep making new stuff. You know, I don't bartend as much anymore. It's been about a year and a half now, but, you know, I was bartending for about 18 years there, maybe 4 to 5 days a week. And my favorite part, like, I loved all that. I love the hospitality. It just, my legs, you know, get tired. So I love it. What I always wanted to move towards was a place where I could really focus on the creativity and really put whatever I felt like in the glass. You know, I like to try to draw inspiration from the smell, the sights, the sounds around me, as well as the taste, and really try to come up with stuff. So for me, I'm just in this amazing spot where I you know, I'm curating all three menus. We're doing these side projects. We have, you know, we're doing EatsCon this weekend, which is a huge festival, 5,000 cocktails out in Flushing. Cool. I'm teaching classes out there. I'm in a great spot where I can continue to be creative and push out the craft. You know, I've hopefully mentioned on this podcast the mixture of these amazing great fine craft, but then also with hospitality and the time that you have. So whether it's in Duluth in a mall or if it's in a back alley hidden in Chinatown, like, I want just that to keep going through and not worry. It doesn't have to be cool. It just is what it is, and it becomes cool. Plus, I get to drink and have fun and hang out.
this all is totally exciting, and I wish we had more time to set it a little cut short today. But where can our listener follow along with you and see all these things that you're doing? You got an Instagram that you want to talk about?
Yeah, definitely. We have each location has their own Instagram, right? So if you want specifics on, like, who's DJing there tonight or whatever, you can go to – those are the different Opitech. There's Opitech NYC, Opitech LA, and then Opitech Nomad. But then we also have Opitech Mixology is our sort of overlaying account. And that's where we post new drinks, new fun things, and sort of cover the broader scale of all that. So definitely Opitech Mixology on Instagram. And then our website is opitechmixology.com. So we've got all that covered. And yeah, we do have a bunch of fun stuff coming up. So I'm very excited.
You know, Nicholas, I wanted to say this, man, and I kind of like a, I thank you for being on the show today, but like, but also I thank you for always being there with Epitech in New York City. And I haven't been to the other two yet, but I will. But the thing is, I love that you've talked a lot about hospitality on the show today, because I would like to say this to every like kind of new bartender out there. It's like, don't get into it for the drinks, get into it for the mixology. Or sorry, the hospitality. Now, don't get into the mixology. Get in for the hospitality. You can learn all about mixology and bartending, especially from people like Nicholas here, right? But the thing is, like, one thing you can't really fake, you can't learn it, you can't fake it, you can't, like, generate it in any other way. It's like, it's hospitality. If you really love that, it's always going to keep you excited. You'll never get bored. You'll always pursue a bigger and better way to do things in your career path if you're really, really passionate about taking care of people, innovating ways of throwing dice at your bartenders, you know, things like that. But it's really the most important thing. And like, that's the through line to me, is like from what I've experienced with the bars and with what you've talked about today, it's like, it's all about taking care of people and providing that experience. That mall bar in Duluth, you know what? They might come out to see you and have a couple of cocktails. If you're running that place, you know what they're going to remember more than the cocktails is how they were taken care of. And so I think that's probably the most important thing that we do in this industry. Would you agree with that, Nicholas?
Oh, 100%. I often, you know, like I said, bartending for 18 years, you definitely, you contemplate life at different moments, especially way too early in the morning, right? And, you know, I often look around. I'm not a doctor. I'm not saving lives. I'm not protecting people. And, you know, after a bad shift, or you're getting that one little fight or, you know, argument, Tiff, and you're like, why am I even doing this? Like, what am I even helping? I'm just dealing with all these drunk people. But if you actually pull back and really look at it, it's like, we do provide an amazing service and something that really helps people through their day, and like providing a time and escape for someone, and they can go out, they can forget about their problems, they can go spend a little money and have a night and then go back to whatever the world brings them or whatever happens. Like, that moment is a really special and means a lot. Hospitality really plays a big point in all of our lives. And I can't tell you how many times people have been like, wow, this is like one of the best experiences we've had. We're going to come back. We're not even from New York. And they'll visit once every like 3 to 4 years, right? I'll catch up with these people that I served the first time like 15 years ago. And I've only seen them like 6 times. But every time they came to New York, they'll come back to visit us just to create that moment, just to feel good. And like,
absolutely.
So it really gives purpose to what we're doing, and not just, I want to make tips and I want that drink to be naturally black without charcoal. You know, like, it's not always just about all that. It's about making the whole experience work. Plus nerding out, you know, it makes it easier to nerd out when everyone's happy.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, man. Very cool.
Well, man, this has been great having you on the show today. I mean, for the people out there listening, if you haven't been to Epitech, any of the locations, definitely go. But I will say this, especially for me, and I know that I'm sure it's the same for the two of you, Southern Greg, like, it's just that first moment, and every moment past that I went to, like, the first moment that I walked down Dodger Street, right?
Yeah, exactly. Doyers.
Which I'm upset about on Sunday. I went to the Giants Dodgers game and you guys crushed us. So we're not going to call it Dodger Street. We'll call it Doyer. But it's a magical moment when you walk around the corner and you see that weird curved alleyway, and you just, before you even get up to the door, you've already like been transported to another place in time. It's wild before you even get in there. So like, definitely go check it out and check out the rest of them. And Nicholas, thanks for being on the show today, man. It's good to catch up with you. Thanks for telling us about, I can't wait to go to the Nomad location. I mean, I'm closer to the LA location now, but I'll be at both of them. So thanks for being on and telling us all about it. And thanks for continuing the amazing hospitality and creativity with Epitech. And dude, congrats on the longevity of, you mentioned before, a lot of places that they don't really make it this long, and you're here to stay, man. You made it. So
Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you guys so much for having me. This was a blast. We'd love to do it again. And you all have my info now, so come visit. I'm definitely both coasts. I'm based out of Los Angeles, but I'm in New York like at least 7 months out of the year. So
very cool.
Sweet. Awesome.
Awesome. We will.
See you soon.
And everyone else should as well. All right. That's it for the Speakeasy this week. Check out Heritage Radio Network for many more programs like this one. Click on the beating heart to donate to the station. And until next week, cheers, everyone.
Cheers, everybody.
Cheers. Salute. So you don't shun
the devil with your rock. The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food and drink radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.